Welcome back to ADHD Money Talk, the show that helps dynamic but distracted ADHD brains take back control over their money in order to stress less, live a more enriching life, and open up new and amazing possibilities. And I'm your humble and quite ADHD host, Dave DeWitt. My ADHD is awful sometimes. It just drives me up the wall because the level of working memory that I have is terrible. Like sometimes I'm doing this podcast and I'm like stuttering or it's choppy and I'm pausing and I have to keep talking because I can't hold a dang thought in my mind for long enough for me to be able to speak it out smoothly because things come in my brain and it drops in, out, in, drop, 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 drop. So that's how I can go from starting a task on my computer and within 5 minutes, I've already started four other tasks and I cannot just continue like doing what I should be doing. And I always have had this thought of like this dream of like when I start a task on my computer, the words for what I'm doing and need to keep doing would just stay on the computer and like be transcribed from my brain directly onto a big script, like big text on the computer, so I could just continue doing that thing and not forget about it. Because within 5 seconds, I sometimes forget and then I'm on to a new thing. So even if I break up my day, you know, I go on, I'm using SunSama now to help me daily plan, and it does help me daily plan, but I can only daily plan so many small tasks. But then when little things, there's always that little, really small task that you forgot about that's in between your other small tasks that you thought were all of them. And then you start doing the task that you planned, but then you have to do the other little task, but then you're flipping between, you think of another one. And then every time that I'm starting a new task that pops in my mind, it's usually like an email I forgot to answer, or it's like something like that along those lines. I can't just write down, I mean, I should, but I couldn't put it in the app every time, like, okay, this is what you're doing now. Because sometimes the task literally will just take 2 minutes, and to like take time to open up the app and like write the task down, I could have already done it. So it's just this big mess, you know. And here I am talking about it, but this is just my struggle. My working memory is so bad. If you look at my IQ score, I'm a brilliant 109. I'm like average, very average intelligence, almost above average, but I'm average. So I have to accept that. I think 110, in some way, 110 would mean that I was like more like superior or like above average, but I'm 109, so I'm average. And I was talking to my ADHD coach, who I hope is listening, and she's like a 139. I'm like, dang, that's so smart. And I thought I was like sort of smart. But when I found out that I was a 109 because this test, I took the IQ test twice, actually. Once when I was very small, like 6 years old, and one when I was in high school. And I scored 109 both times exactly. So I feel pretty confident that I'm a 109. But if you look at it, and we're going to get into what this podcast is about. We are going to talk about money today. The IQ test, what I got, this was part of my, like, you know, if you listen to one of the my early episodes, I talked all about this, but I had like very hardcore testing done. I took all of these tests. I took Bender Gestalt, Stanford Binet Intelligence, Detroit Tests of Learning Aptitude, Detroit Tests of Learning Aptitude 4, Brown ADD Scales, Burns and Rowe Informal Word Recognition Inventory, Burns and Rowe Yada Yada, Nelson Denny Reading, Woodcock Johnson Tests of Achievement. God, that was like a test subject, I felt like. Here's my IQ scores for each section of the IQ test. Verbal Comprehension, 114. 82nd percentile. Okay, so I've always excelled with words more so than numbers. Ha, I'm a financial planner. What the heck am I doing in this job? Just kidding, I'm not. I'm not thinking that way. I don't have imposter syndrome, I swear. Perceptual Reasoning, 108, 70th percentile. Okay, I'll take it. Processing Speed, 70 or 109. Okay, 73rd percentile. Okay, I'll take it. Okay, feeling pretty good. Full Scale IQ, 109. That's the full one. And I skipped one because I'm just so ashamed of it. Working Memory, 94 and the 34th percentile. So this has always made me think, like, to some extent, I'm like, is it ADHD or is like that part of my brain just broken? Like, do I get hit in the head really hard on my working memory section of my brain? I don't entertain those thoughts, like, really, because it could be, it could not be. I don't know. I don't really care. I've accepted everything about it. But, like, it's the worst part of my ADHD. For sure. Working memory is how it's most affected. It's how it's gone. And working memory is one of those things where, like, it could totally make you look dumb. Like, it can make you feel dumb, look dumb. People can think you're dumb. That's what I experienced with my soccer story and my sports. And it sucks. Because what this is, you forget the name. You get lost in conversation. You can't remember what they had just said. You have nothing to say back to the person because you're too busy trying to scramble to remember what they said. And then you feel awkward. And then you just nod your head and stare blankly or stare through them and say, I can't wait for this guy to start talking. What's my way out of here? I feel like a dummy. And that sucks. It doesn't feel good. It's the worst. Or in my case, soccer practice. Coach is saying, okay, you go from this spot to this spot to this spot and back and forth, and then loop de loop back and forth. Okay, go do that. And everyone's like, yeah, we got that. That's easy. And I'm up. I'm like, oh, okay, I run in the wrong direction 5 times in a row, and then I'm being yelled at and all that. It sucks. It hurts, and it sucks. So working memory sucks. And ADHD, and that hurts money too. Like, how are you supposed to really keep track of what I'm spending, what's coming, what's coming out? I can't even remember my own phone number sometimes. It's crazy. So, like, working memory sucks, and that is an executive function. And ADHD is a disorder of the executive function. This is a disorder of your prefrontal cortex that is not getting enough dopamine. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a person that knows things officially about these things. So just don't take my word for it. It's just what my understanding. My understanding is that every humans need, like, dopamine keeps us feeling good and motivated, right? It's like this thing that just, like, keeps us, like, appropriately motivated to do things, to get appropriate rewards at the appropriate time, and to understand the long-term consequences of things, and so that you act appropriately in alignment with those standard long-term, you know, this is what it gives you when it's regulating through your brain properly, and it's not gone half the time and then bursting in there when you do something crazy. So that's what ADHD is to me. So I feel like I have it on that front. And then I also feel like I have it on the front of, like, extra bad working memory, because it's just brutal sometimes. So, you know, working memory is like the sticky note in your brain that you can see and remember. It's like you just took a note down. You just heard someone's name and it's stuck on your brain and you can't forget it. It's there. You're holding that information. You can only hold so much in your working memory, but it's there. And so when it comes to financial stuff, you're like, okay, this bill's due on this day, whatever. It's on the sticky note. But that sticky note, our sticky note, is like looking at the colorblind test when you're colorblind. You can't remember. You can't see it. It's blurry. You're like, where is the number? I don't see it. I can't remember. And so if you're in the middle needing to make a decision about finances or whatever, and you just can't remember what the right information is, you're either going to just shut down and do nothing, or you're just going to make the decision, good or bad. You'll figure out the consequences later. I mean, it's not easy to keep track of anything like that. That's why I always recommend tracking your expenses. You have to make that routine or the habit so automatic. Like, it's got to be like, okay, I spent money on a thing. I need to go write down in my spending journal what I wrote. You need to make it so that you're doing that in the same way that when you sit down on the toilet, you take out your phone. You know, that's a muscle memory that just happens. You need to develop habits through whatever means free you possibly can to get that done. And I talk to a lot of people who want to control when they pay bills, they want to do it manually, they want to feel in control. A lot of times this comes because you are so paycheck to paycheck that you just want to make sure, you know, by doing it manually, you can make absolutely sure that you have money in the account and won't be getting overdraft fees. So if that's you, then honestly, most people that are doing that are pretty actually good at it because they're so used to it, because it's a routine, it's a habit. So you need to get routine and habit going in other areas, like tracking your expenses, because it's not the bills that are the problem. It's the handing over of the card. It's usually the problem. And just a complete lack of awareness of what's actually going out besides the bills. you know, you've paid the energy bill enough times, you paid the rent enough times to be able to remember that, because eventually, like, we can remember things. Our long-term memory isn't so bad, but it's all the things that are temporary. So we're probably like 12 minutes into this podcast, 13 minutes, and this podcast is about executive functions and money. I hope you got that point. I know I just started talking about me and my problems and my working memory, but we are going to keep talking for the next 6 minutes or so about the other executive functions that it affects. So let's continue on. Impulse control. Impulse control. Now, I always feel like they're all related. Like, it's hard. Like, my brain doesn't really separate out very well. Like, yes, I understand that impulse control is like you have an impulse to do something and you can't control it. But it's all interrelated, because how much of you being unable to stop the impulse is due to the fact that you can't remember the reason why you shouldn't do the thing in the first place. So it's like working memory and impulse are interrelated. Regardless, we all know what it's like. I mean, this year I had 5 months good. Like, I was as tracking and as, unfortunately, dictatorial as I ever have been about spending, expenses and stuff. Part of it's because I'm a little bit overly controlling, just being honest, and I work on that. But there's always a central theme, and it's like, if I'm not in control or if I'm not controlling, then I feel like it's lost and I'm just lost. So that's why I feel like control for me is very important. It keeps me feeling sane. But this month of July just got completely out of hand. I utterly obliterated my budget for July. Now, I'll be honest with you, it's not as bad because I'm blessed and I have income that's pretty good these days. It's keeping me going. It was just so far off from my goal. You know, we did some things to the house and that we had been planning on. Well, we were planning. So this is how it goes. We've been talking for like 4 years about doing things to the house, right? But we didn't really say when we would do it. And so I had been setting aside some money for it. But then because we have a kid coming in October, or for whatever reason, it was just like, okay, this is the month. And we just looked at each other and we were like, cha-ching, let's go buy the stuff. And so it wasn't just the fridge and the dishwasher, but it was also, you know, the new recessed lights, and it was this and that. It was like I just pulled forward all the projects and just said July is the month. And part of what I do when I do this, and it was impulsive, it without a question is impulsive. I mean, you know, and this is how spending snowballs. You do the one thing, you let loose and you spend money after you have it in a while, and you get that rush of return of like the dopamine. It comes strong, and then you haven't had that kind of dopamine in a while, and so you just want more. You just want more. And so it was so much easier for me then. After I made the first decision and I bought the appliances that we really needed a fridge. Like, you should have seen the block of ice that came out of that freezer that was broken. It was insane. But you do the one thing, and then because you did the one thing, it's so much easier to do the next, and 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 the next. It's like breaking the dam. And so then the impulse of this just comes on. And part of it's because you were so tired from resisting all of the impulse. But, and you know, this podcast is actually going to just be whatever. It's just going to, because I can't keep this going forever. So we're just going to talk a little bit more about this, because now I'm on a thought that I think is useful. So this actually is a good real-time example of the improvement that I have made in my financial ability to recover. So if this was me before having done the mental work, before having learned about personal finance to the extent that I have over the past few years, before I honestly just was older, because when I was 27, I was just, first of all, I was in my 20s, and so I wasn't fully mature, and I'm still not fully mature. Second of all, I probably had the maturity of a 20-year-old because ADHD or just being too spoiled, or you know what I mean? Like, just whatever. So what I'm trying to say is, now that I've been tracking on Monarch for, you know, pretty much this whole year, keep a very good close look on it. And even throughout this very high spending period on the house, I still have looked at it. I faced it, you know, not as much, and I avoided it a bit, but I'm looking at it and I'm accepting it, and I'm looking at August. I'm on August and I'm setting the budget for August, and I have this flood of confidence, and it's so much easier for me to pivot back to new how I need to be. Whereas before this, I would never even thought until it was too late to stop. So that is the improvement that I've made, and the improvement that you can make just simply by keeping at it. It's just, and that's really all it is. Take the things, the principles I laid out in the beginning of this podcast, tracking on paper, using Monarch, just looking at it every day for 5 minutes, you'll make progress. Impulse control is a struggle. Let's be real. Another one is cognitive flexibility. Cognitive flexibility is our brain's ability to shift between different thoughts or actions in response to changing situations. It's basically like our brain's ability to just transition from task to task and like efficiently do that and adapt to new environments and circumstances or change strategies when current ones are ineffective and even just recognizing when it's ineffective. It's really a good skill to have, right? It's a great skill to have for problem solving and planning and social interactions. Yeah. So cognitive flexibility, that's like when my wife is like, hey, can you come do this thing? And my brain was like, well, I was going to do this thing. And that's what I really wanted to do. So it's like literally pulling my teeth sometimes for me to get up and do the other thing and switch my brain. Like my cognitive flexibility is pretty bad. I'm just going to tell you that right now. And in finances, you're already overwhelmed enough trying to juggle tasks at work, trying to juggle your home life with the kids and with your marriage and with everything, or, you know, relationship, whatever. Then when financial stuff comes up, you already want to avoid it. And now you have to change your plans financially. And well, the rest is history for a lot of us. We just don't. And we just continue on until we're forced. See, with finances, it's so easy to bury your head in the sand until you have no choice but to do something. And at that point, it's very painful. And so cognitive flexibility, if we're just not really up to the neurotypical standard, then we're going to kind of struggle. So you have new income, you have a big bonus. What do you do with it? You're used to the paycheck and you're used to what you're doing, and you know, and now you have this extra amount of money. What do you do with it? A lot of times you'll just do what the first impulse says, or you'll think about it for a long time and get all twisted up, and then you'll just do something to just get rid of it, or just to say, okay, I'm just going to do this, just so that you've done something and you can move on without really knowing if it was the right thing to do, or you just do nothing and let it sit there, or you just throw it all at credit card debt because that's the most pressing thing that you have going on when maybe there was more optimal things you could have done. It's very difficult just to think through this, and I hear this a lot from my clients. It's just like, one of the things I constantly hear is that they just want my guidance when they have a little bit of a windfall, when the bonus or whatever, they just want to be told what to do with it. And I get it. I mean, it is nice. It is a nice thing. It's simple, but it is nice. Apart from doing like brain training or I don't know, like ask your therapist or your psychiatrist what you can do to help your cognitive flexibility for realsies. But what you can also do is have financial guardrails. You can have a financial planner like me. You could have financial coach, you could have very strict rules set up with different accounts and stuff. You can create things to help you navigate the decision-making process so that's easier when things do change. A financial planner, though, is like probably your best bet because I am one and you should be my client. Just kidding. But really, that is part of the value of having a financial planner, because then as soon as a financial question hits your head and you do not know the answer, you just have a human to ask who already knows all about your situation. And that is a nice thing. Ooh, this one's a biggie. Task initiation. Task initiation is second to working memory, the worst. It's hard. Whenever I do initiate the task finally, it goes decently. But to start that task, I mean, boy, that is hard. And it's always the task for me that is related to client work. So anything that has to do with a thing that I'm going to be delivering that causes my perfectionism to kind of come up and just start to dominate my being, I get stuck and I'll just find little diddly squat things to do and not do the thing I should be doing until it's last second. And then I end up doing quality work that's not up to the quality that I would have liked, but I had to get it done because I had a meeting, right? So that's my biggest problem, is task initiation. In finances, I'm okay with task initiation in finances. I'll tell you what, I'm okay. Because for me, task initiation for finances comes down to things like going in and up, looking at my 401k contributions, going to Monarch and organizing transactions and categorizing and looking at the budget, the plan page, and seeing how I'm doing and sitting there for 20 minutes just staring at Monarch and moving things around. Like, I like doing that. I didn't used to. It was hard, but, you know, I do like it now, and I'm okay with it. For a lot of you out there, though, I know it's very hard. Taxes, so hard to get started, so hard to even think. Like, you're just like five brain gymnastics moves away from even being able to consider starting some of the things that you know you need to start. So task initiation is a huge, hard one. Oh boy, so hard. And from there, I'm starting to get tired. I need to go take a nap. So let's just wrap this up. We've got emotional regulation is very related to retail therapy. It's very related to spending to get a dopamine fix. It's very a thing that's very, very real. What helps with this? Exercise. Feeling better helps with this. That's my experience. Solving the emotional situation at the core, at the root, is it your relationship? Is it some sort of internal strife you have with yourself? Is it some sort of conflict with your family? What is it? Is it just your brain, your chemicals? Do you need to go see your psychiatrist and try different medication or, you know, whatever it is? If you're constantly having like mood swings and you're emotionally a little bit unstable and you find yourself going to spending to solve any of that, you're in trouble, frankly. I mean, I've been there. I still go there for sure. Not as bad. You know, I've read a lot of books. Books help. Read books. And the more you read, you just need to build up that armor of defense. Like, you need to build up the knowledge of like why it's bad to spend money you don't have. Why is it bad? What do you really want? What, like I've said that a billion times, what do you want? Money will not, I mean, things will not and cannot give you true fulfilling happiness. Our economic system is set up in such a way that everyone is incentivized to make you think that, but it will not. When's the last time you had lasting joy, like lasting true everyday smile on your face happiness from a thing? You haven't. You won't, but you would from having kids or having a great relationship or having great connections with family and friends. And that's where it's at. Yo, that's where it's at. That's where it's at. So exercise, when you feel the urge to do retail therapy, go outside and run a lap or think about your kids. That one helps me. I just think about, you know, my daughter and it makes me want to act right. And then, like, planning is an executive function that we ain't so good at. Organization, we're not so good at. Well, sometimes I feel like I'm good at organizing. I can make pretty things and whatever. But as soon as there's one wrench in any system I make, it's very unsettling. And I don't know what to do about it half the time. So all I can say for this is get on an app, get on Monarch, get on Mint, get on Rocket Money, which used to be Truebill. Categorize, budget, and organize it the best you can. When you're thinking about categories, it gets everybody. Everybody struggles with categories. Here's a few things. I'm going to end on this. If you don't know what category to put it in, make a new one. When in doubt, make a new one. Never let yourself spend more than a minute struggling to figure out what to do, because this is not a science. There's no perfect place. At the end of the day, all you really need to have categorized correctly is expenses, income, transfers. If expenses are labeled as an expense and income is labeled as income and transfers are labeled as transfers, then you have an accurate picture month to month of how much money you are accumulating in debt or how much money you are saving and can invest and can build wealth and can make your dreams come true. So that's how I'm going to end this episode. Thanks for listening to my ramble. It was a ramble. It was fun. I was going to go to the gym and I did this instead, but now I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to talk to you guys later, and I hope you have a great weekend, summer, everything is going to be great. We all are going to be great. I love you guys. See you soon.